Thank you, Paul. Thanks so much. You know, our worship associates do so much to set the tone for our services. There are so many people who do so much to make things happen here. It looks simple, but yeah, it's simple, but it's not easy. Thanks so much for the work that you do to make things happen. Now, I think I'm going to put this down one book because I'm a tad less vertically inspired than Paul is. Are we on? No, we're not. There we go. Okay, I got to do my joke again. I'm a tad less vertically inspired than Paul. It's not a good joke. I've had a summer, you know, to get out of practice. So, here's one of my favorite stories about work and spirit. It's from the Zhuangzi, one of the classic books in China's Taoist tradition that teaches us to follow the way of nature. It's beloved of martial artists, interestingly enough. If any story has meat on its bones, this one does, at least at the start. Cook Ting was cutting up an ox for Lord Wenhui. At every touch of his hand, every heave of his shoulder, every move of his feet, every thrust of his knee, zip, zoop, he slithered the knife along with a zing, and all was in perfect rhythm, as though he were performing the dance of the mulberry grove, whatever that is, or keeping time to music. "This is marvelous," said Lord Wenhui. "Imagine skill reaching such heights." Cook Ting laid down his knife and replied, "What I care about is the way which goes beyond skill. When I first began cutting up oxen, all I could see was the ox itself. After 3 years, I no longer saw the whole ox, and now I go at it by spirit, and I don't look with my eyes. Perception and understanding have come to a stop, and spirit moves where it wants. I go along with the natural makeup, strike in the big hollows, guide the knife through the big openings, and follow things as they are. So I never touch the smallest ligament or tendon, much less a main joint. A good cook changes his knife once a year because he cuts. A mediocre cook changes his knife once a month because he hacks. I've had this knife of mine for 19 years, and I've cut up thousands of oxen with it, and yet the blade is as good as though it had just come from the grindstone. There are spaces between the joints, and the edge of the knife really has no thickness. You know, I used to teach tool sharpening to woodworkers, and we say, we're going for zero. We want that edge to be a 0 point, nothing there. If you insert what has no thickness into such spaces, then there's plenty of room, more than enough for the blade to play about it. That's why, after 19 years, the blade of my knife is still as good as when it came from the grindstone. However, when I come to a complicated place, I size up the difficulties, tell myself to watch out and be careful, keep my eyes on what I'm doing, work very slowly, and move the knife with the greatest subtlety until flop. The whole thing just comes apart, like a clod of earth crumbling to the ground. I stand there holding the knife and look all around me, completely satisfied and reluctant to move on. Oh, that's the work I like. Yeah. And then I wipe off the blade and put it away. "Excellent," said Lord Wenhui. "I've heard the words of Cook Ting and learned how to care for life." Lord Wenhui has learned to care for life from watching Cook Ting dance through what others approach as hard labor, dulling their knives and their senses. Clearly, Lord Wenhui has found the right cook, and Ting has found the right employer. It's a wonderful thing when that happens, when employer and employed learn to care for life together. So now let's hear Deborah work those keys on this Sunday before Labor Day. And I got to tell you what I just saw when I looked over there. Deborah's busy making something. What are you making?
A shawl.
A shawl. Okay, so she's working before she goes to work on the keys. Thank you. you. When I was listening to that, I was thinking of somebody opening the curtains in a great hall, you know, opening curtains, and there's the mountains, there's the forest, there's the sea. I don't know where that image came from. Excellent, said Lord Wen Wei. I've heard the words of Cook Ting and learned how to care for life. Something has occurred between these two that goes beyond the usual employer-employee relationship. It's wonderful when something like that happens. I hope that it has happened for you. It certainly has for me. This is the fourth congregation that I have served half-time in the past 20 years. One of those was 300 miles from my home, and it grew to the point where they needed a full-time minister. They offered me the position, but due to my wife's employment, I was not able to relocate. Considering how well things had gone there, I figured that another congregation would want my services before too long. I sent out my packet. It's the thing we use to contact congregations. I waited confidently for a reply from one that seemed just right and was closer to home. I made it through a few stages of the process, but in the end, I was not called to serve there. My confidence went down a bit, but I stayed hopeful. Hopeful, in spite of some troubling numbers that we could call labor statistics, there are roughly 1,800 Unitarian Universalist ministers in fellowship today, fully qualified, but just over 1,000 UU churches. So going on twice as many candidates as there are positions for them to fill. It's great that there are so many who are eager to serve, but it makes for a tough labor situation. For 2 years, I kept sending out my packet, hoping it would land in the right spot, over and over, but with the same result. More than once, I was passed over for a candidate who was willing to relocate and move from across the country to a community for a half or even quarter-time position. No surprise that a congregation would make this choice, right? Who do you want, the one who's going to live there or the one who's going to drive in, fly in? I took some custom woodworking commissions, but these were few and far between. I taught a class at my wife's university and sent my name around as a supply minister and seminar leader to churches throughout the Northwest. These are the days of the U.S., the buildup to the U.S. invasion of Iraq. So with my particular background, I was able to keep busy on weekends, leading Saturday seminars and then preaching on Sundays, trying to help folks understand Islam. That's all I was able to manage, and I was getting worried. One night, I lay awake during a wild rain and windstorm, wondering what to do next about finding work. I woke up the next morning, and I found plenty of work cut out for me. Or maybe I should say broken off. There was a huge Douglas fir that had been allowed to grow in a bad location right between our house and the neighbors to the south. It had lost a dozen limbs in the storm, some landing on the roof right over our son's bedroom, little boy. Other neighbors further up the hill had recently had one side of their house crushed by a falling Doug fir, and we were afraid that the same might happen to ours. Debris from the tree had clogged our gutters. Decaying material provided food for ants, which often found their way inside. So we had the tree inspected. The trunk was cracked, and it would have to come down. Since money was tight, we looked into our options. How much to cut and remove versus how much just to cut it down. How much more to get the wood split so we could burn it in our wood stove, save some more money. Too much for us right then. So finally we decided to just have the tree sectioned and the branches removed. I would deal with splitting the sections myself. The day of cutting was a great day of entertainment for the whole neighborhood. Up went the arborist. First he removed the limbs, which left a great single trunk sticking up like a ship's mast. Teachers brought kids outside from the nearby school so they could watch it. Then down came the trunk sections, one after the other. The upper ones looked manageable to me. But as the arborist worked his way down, the sections got wider and wider till the lower ones were about 4 feet in diameter. How was I going to handle these? After so many recent disappointments on the employment front, I wasn't feeling so confident anymore. The arborist and I looked over the huge pile, and he asked me if I was sure I could handle all that. He didn't say anything about, you look a little long in the tooth, but, you know, he was probably thinking that. For a price, he could bring in a wood splitter and maybe also remove the stump. I said, no, I'd need the stump to use as a base for splitting. Maybe I'd shape it into a garden seat later. I started bright and early the next morning, and I quickly discovered that the thick, tight bark was working against me as I swung my 6-pound splitting mauls, preventing the split. Fortunately, I had an old-fashioned tool that I found at an outdoor sale in Illinois, something called a barking spud. Anybody ever seen a barking spud? It's like a big chisel on a long handle. And the fellow who sold it to me had been surprised that I knew what it was for. You work it between the bark and the outer layer of the wood, and if you get it right, the bark will start to come off in large sections. I peeled the first few rounds, then started to think about how I could get them up on the stump for splitting. The wide ones weighed as much or much more than me. Even the narrower sections were surprisingly heavy. They were wet with sap and pitch, and lifting them by myself was out of the question for all but the top few. So maybe I should build a ramp. I was heading to the garage for some 2x4s and plywood when I noticed that the bark pieces lying on the ground were all over an inch thick. All I needed to do was overlap the sections gradually, and my ramp was made. A lot less slippery than if it had been plywood, right? I was delighted to discover that everything I needed was lying near at hand, just waiting for me to notice that it was there. Has that ever happened to you? Has that ever happened to you? Happened to enough people to maybe turn to your neighbor and talk about it a little bit? Take a moment to share about some time that's happened to you, when you found everything you needed was right there when you didn't expect it. Well, it seems like that's a not uncommon experience, isn't it? I invite you, please continue these conversations. We have a potluck coming up. What a great thing to talk about during the potluck. You know, the potluck, the social hour, that's not separate from the religious service, right? That's where we carry all those good feelings and all that. We carry that into the potluck. You don't go back to work, right? Well, apart from the weight, some of the smaller, rounder sections of that big Doug fir were very easy to split. I could strike near the center and get 2 nearly perfect halves, and then quarters, and so on. But others were much more difficult, especially where there had been branches. I could see where the arborist had cut most of those, but often, and this is the strange part, this is where the title of the sermon, Hidden Knots, come from. I'd come to a section where it seemed no limb had ever been. But the work was just as hard. And then when it finally split, I would find a dark, round knot deep inside, completely covered by other layers of wood. Clean cut. somebody had sawn off a branch decades before. And here was the record of their work. Who had it been? It's a big tree. Were they still alive? Who would know? But here was a memory written in substance, but no words, no details. Human labor is a funny thing, flowing on mostly without record unless you find some old pages with the wages written down. When it comes to names, the designer of a dam or a monument is remembered, but not those who really built it. It's even easier to forget those who worked their whole lives for no wages at all, like the slaves who built the White House or the U.S. Capitol. 400 of 600 of those workers were slaves. Or the United States of America themselves, with its total economy, North and South, given such a huge leg up by enslaved laborers, a leg that still supports us all today if we're honest about it. We can feel that dark, buried knot deep in our guts. Grain or gravel can be accumulated and stored. So can gold and other forms of capital. Electricity can be stored now, like oil or coal or other kinds of energy. Storage might even improve its quality, like a stack of Douglas fir drying through the seasons. But labor is different. It can't be stored or saved for later unless unemployment is a form of storage and not a form of waste. I can't make the call. Those who labor one day hope to work the next, but can most hope to be remembered? Let's try tomorrow on Labor Day, while most of us enjoy a day off work that others worked so hard to give us for such low wages or even none at all, including the many labor leaders, only a few of whose names are known, and the countless nameless strikers and marchers who joined them in solidarity. Day by day, back to the tree, knot by knot, I got better at what I was doing. It was hard work, but I woke up eager to do it. I wrote in my journal, I enjoy the work. In my second year without a church settlement, it's good to have something like this. I know what I'm doing, how to do it, and why. I don't get that often in my current situation. And that's one of the problems with the experience of unemployment. As it deepens, you lose that sense of what and how and why. I felt grateful for my tree and the sense of purpose that it gave me. But I was also worried about what I would do when the work was finished. Hard as it was, I feared that not having it to do would be so much harder. No work can be the hardest work of all, as I'm sure that all of you who have faced unemployment can testify. I'd have to face the end of this job sooner or later, but more remained to do. Sometimes I came to a section that wouldn't split, but I'd keep at it. Swinging the maul harder rarely did the trick, so I learned to swing it smarter. I would let it fall of its own weight, listen with my ears and hands and my whole body. Bringing my martial arts experience into play, I'd rotate it just a little, changing my position. Eventually, I would feel a subtle change, as if the wood was waiting to open like a door if I would only knock again. One more swing, and then the split would start. I felt like Cook Ting cutting up his ox. I sharpened them all once, but not more than that. Remember how Ting said, whenever I come to a complicated place, I size up the difficulties, tell myself to watch out and be careful, keep my eyes what I'm doing, work very slowly, and move the knife with the greatest subtlety until, flop, the whole thing comes apart. I often felt the same kind of satisfaction. So was this work or dance or play? But plants grow differently than animals do. With animals, joints offer open spaces. Joints of a tree are just the opposite. The grain gets all complex. It would grab them all and not let go. And then I'd be in trouble. Sometimes the best I could do was pound in a wedge in order to free my maul, then try to knock the wedge loose with the blunt end. Part of my pleasure in this work was the use of the most basic tools. The wedge, the inclined plane, my ramp made of bark. Simple tools, complex grain, mixed results, but deep down, satisfaction. I thought about the religious movement that was so much a part of my life, as well as my livelihood. The very name is complex. Unitarian Universalist Association. I've often heard suggestions that we make it simple. Just say Unitarian Church, or maybe something still more snappy, but this rippling 15-syllable name says something important about the people who use it to describe the religious work we do in this world. The same is true of our statement of principles and sources, like you see on the back of your order of service. There's an abundance of words, not just a few, a joyful complexity that we claim as our own. In some ways, we are simple souls, but we're not spiritually simple. Simple tools, complex grain, mixed results, but deep down, satisfaction. We draw, if you look at those sources, from direct experience of a great mystery that shapes trees and people, from the teachings of the world's great religions, the words and deeds of prophetic women and men, be they religious, humanist, or atheist in outlook. We sense that whatever forces might be acting to split us apart, there's still a web that holds us all together. It's something complex but coherent. Like a tree with many branches, it's especially tough where they come together. There's a strength here, deep in the fiber, something hard to split apart. Like Cook Ting's knife for my own splitting maul, my ministerial packet finally landed in the right spot, and ting, something clicked with the congregation. One that I ended up serving for almost 10 years. That packet, the primary tool for finding and enlarging an opening in my line of work, an opening to a congregation, included sample newsletter columns, sermons, descriptions of classes that I'd taught, a wedding, a funeral that I'd done. I included some sample articles from my days as assistant editor of a woodworking magazine, describing the use of tools more subtle than a 6-pound maul, but still based mostly on the simple wedge. And I could go on about chisels and planes and the shapes of saw teeth and how cross-cut teeth are more like a knife and ripped teeth are more like a chisel until you ran out of here screaming. What I didn't include in my packets was any detailed descriptions of my recent unemployment. I hoped the search committee wouldn't notice that space between all the trees in the forest of achievements and interests that I was presenting along with my resume, just as I hoped that you wouldn't notice those gaps when I sent my most recent package to you. I probably shouldn't have worried. You would have recognized at once that such an experience, one that I share with 4 out of 5 adult Americans, from what I've read, can be counted to the credit of anyone who hopes to serve a congregation of real human beings in the real world today. Like it was for Cook Ting and Lord Wenhui, something happens between a minister and a congregation that goes beyond the usual employer-employee relationship. Together, We learn to care for life. We learn to care for life better than we could on our own. I look forward to another year of sharing this work with you. Blessed be.